Once they've told you about their family or their dog, the important things in their life that you've elicited in your SF conversation, actually saying, so if I were to start a list, let's call it maybe reasons for living, would being a father be one of those reasons for living? Could I start that? Could I put that at the top of the list or on the list, And then the conversation eliciting more. That sort of stuff just sits so beautifully with someone who's had thoughts of dying or killing themselves, because there are reasons for living. It's about us as clinicians helping them find them.
That is Simply Focus with Elva Chani and Dominic Gilda for Life and Joy and Ease.
Are you ready for this new episode? Then please welcome your hosts, Elfie Cherney and Dominic Godad.
Welcome back, everyone, to episode number 104.
We are here on Zoom with Michelle Orr. Hi, Michelle.
Hello. Good evening. Good morning. Good afternoon, if you're there.
So great to see you again, Michelle. We met each other for the first time at the SFETA conference in Boulder. And you traveled all from Melbourne to Colorado, which was amazing. And it was really, really great to meet you, to be in contact with you. And you were on a podcast back then already for a moment when we were with Heather Fisk and Brenda Salter-Minden, Train the Trainers pre-conference workshop in episode number 37. Yeah, it's good to have you again on our podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I can't believe it's been that many podcasts since way back then.
And you came to Florence to the EBTA conference and then drove all the way with the motorcycle to Bern to come to workshop that we organized with Heather Fisk. And that was so lovely to see you and your partner together and to have this amazing adventure of cycling through Switzerland afterwards.
Yeah, we are really happy to have been traveling with you for quite a while. We were, from the first encounter we had with you, very inspired by your way of talking about SF, your way of connecting with people. And we really, really look forward to have a conversation with you today about your work and all the amazing things you do. So thank you very much for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Michelle, you're a mental health nurse. You're in a brief intervention team at the Community Mental Health Service in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne. You're team leader, you're solution focused practitioner, you're board member of the AASFBT, Australasian Association of Solution Focused Brief Therapy, that is now renaming itself to ASFA, the Australasian Solution Focused Association. And you were the first Australian on our podcast.
Yay! Wow, that was a mouthful. Yes, all of those, all of the above.
So, Michelle, what is it that fascinates you about solution focus?
Wow, there's so much. I could have you here for another hour or two. So what fascinates me is how simple but not simple it is, how we can have conversations with people and it doesn't seem like therapy, it doesn't seem like hard work, but the person is in control of what the situation is, of the conversation. All we're doing is actually asking the questions, and they get to actually make the decision of, I suppose, getting to where they want to be for that preferred future or that best hope. All we're doing is just the process. We're just offering the questions. And so to every answer that we receive from the last question, we're the ones that actually make the next question in response to what they've said. So there's no, I think Pam King made a really lovely point about it. It's about that ad-libbing. It's actually quite, need to be almost courageous also to do solution focus because of the ad-libbing. So there's structure, but there's no structure at the same time. Yeah, it's respectful, it's hopeful, and it sounds to anyone else like any other conversation, really.
And when did you first get in touch with solution focus and how did that happen?
Okay, so about 9 years ago, I started a position as a nurse practitioner candidate. So I was in training and the job was to see people who were referred to me and only me at the time. These people would have been seen in an emergency department. They had experienced thoughts of killing themselves, thoughts of suicide, or they had attempted suicide. And when I was creating the clinic, I said to the executive, so what therapy would you like me to practice? And they said, we don't know. You work it out. You've got 3 sessions to see these people. You have to work out what therapy. So I had no idea. About probably 6 to 8 months of researching what's going to suit these people that come to see me. And then I stumbled across Solution Focused Brief Therapy and read more and read papers on it and read some more. And I thought, of course, this just makes sense. Unfortunately, it was time limited for the amount of time I could see the people, but it made sense that I can have conversations with these people who have had thoughts of killing themselves. But in actual fact, in the conversations that I have with them, because of the type of question I might ask, it's respectful, it's hopeful. It engenders a trust with me and that I have a trust in them, that it's something that happens quite naturally because of the solution-focused approach. It just sounded like it was going to be, this is what I think will work. So I started using it, and now and again, because I was practicing by myself, it was difficult to keep going. So then I'd sort of fall off the bandwagon, the SF bandwagon, and go back into this problem-saturated world. And then I'd remind myself, I'd review some documents or review some papers, and then I'd need to get back into this. This is so much better. And then, you know, over time, it's just become, that's the way I work.
And you just said you're in this problem-saturated world. So what else is helping you to bring in solution focus? And you do that very passionately, as we know you.
Okay, so training, and more training. And so if there's anything that's available online, one of the things was actually joining the Australasian Association, because then I know I'm connected to people who are solution-focused or have that mindset, that paradigm. Then over the time, I realized that if I go, it's almost like someone who lives with an addiction. If I don't have my dose of solution-focused contact, it keeps you healthy. So what keeps me using solution-focused and more confident in it is exposure to people who use solution-focused, talk solution-focused, train solution-focused. So the more exposure and the more I use it, the more confident you become in it. The more it becomes who you are, what you do, how you do things. And the one thing that really made that so obvious to me was my original training in Australia with Michael Durant. That was the introduction training. Then I went and did the advanced training a couple of years later, and I realized, because I thought I was lacking in it, solution focus, and then I realized actually I've been practicing it. I just needed another booster session. So I did some more. And then going and doing the 2 or 3 day workshop with Heather and Brenda at the SFBTA at the pre-conference was like, oh, wow, I love this so much. And it just reinvigorates me every time I do training or do workshops. It reinvigorates my passion even more, or as like I said, it's a booster. And I just go back even more passionate to my team and to my organisation and my poor family and partner who hear nothing but solution focused.
And what do the people in your organization see you doing that might show them that this is solution focused?
So if it's in an organizational leadership meeting, for instance, so often it's bogged down with most things that have gone wrong. So often I'll be in a meeting and there'll be agenda items around, for instance, the number of, let's say, critical incidents. So often my approach will be, despite what went wrong, what did the team members manage to do well, and how did they do that, and how can they do more of that? And, you know, what is it that they wanted to do better, that next time something like this happens, that things will happen differently? So focusing on, rather than we've done so badly and so poorly and this is such a bad outcome, it's about what opportunities have arisen from this. And that's in organisational stuff. Often I use how and what questions in meetings. So they'll, rather than the whys, which is to find out root cause analysis. So people say it's the fishbone, and you actually have to ask in this methodology, it's not solution focused, but it's why on this fishbone. And I'm thinking, this is just, all this is doing is drilling down to more problems. Like, how can we do things differently? Or, you know, so often I can be a thorn in the side in some of those training sessions because I just don't do problems well. I'm happy to acknowledge them. I'm happy to work with them. However, how can we do this, you know, better, differently? So that's how I do in organisational meetings. But also in my organisation, I think they know that anything that comes in contact with my teams, there's always going to be a solution-focused slant to what comes out of it. So whether it's the people that we see, if it's a complaint from a client or a family, then it'll end up on my desk, because the approach will be a solution-focused approach. It won't be trying to dodge the bullets. It'll be about actually accepting what might have gone wrong and how we might be able to do things differently for people to actually get the, you know, preferred outcome that they would have liked. And yeah, to actually become employed in the team that I team lead, people are expected to actually undertake some solution-focused training. And if they haven't had the training, then at the moment I'm doing just 45 minutes a week, which is just enough time for people to make to actually do some solution-focused training. So it's only short, it's not taxing for people, but it's just enough for them to keep in mind what we do differently and what we do well.
So it's their constant dose of solution focus every week, 45 minutes.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you're in a problem-saturated world. You mentioned that people come to you maybe with suicidal thoughts, that you have critical incidents, kind of this type of language. And solution focus is quite different. You said it's a paradigm shift, something different. And a lot of people that we know that have not been in contact with solution focus say, well, you know, this is not going to work because people, they come with problem. They want to talk about problems. If you're in a problem world, then they want to be in there. So the question that I would like you to tell us about is, how do people react to this solution-focused way when they come with suicidal thoughts, when they come and talk about critical incidents, when they come with their problems?
It's a different approach because people do come to mental health services expecting that we will ask them about their problems. And some people actually become quite defensive because if they've had previous experience with mental health services, it may be that they feel like they have to explain themselves. So often the first question, for instance, if they've been referred from an emergency department or a crisis team, will be, so since you were seen by or referred by blah, the emergency department, you expressed thoughts of wanting to kill yourself, then, you know, how have you managed since then? Already we're sort of, you know, blaming how they've managed. Or what's better since you were in the emergency department 3 days ago? What do you mean? Nothing's better. Like, I still want to kill myself. Wow. So despite those thoughts, how have you managed? Like, that must have been tough. So, you know, what's happened? How have you done that? Away we go. It just happens, yeah, organically, I suppose. Yes, we need to acknowledge that the person's attempted suicide or they've had thoughts of killing themselves. Yes, we need to acknowledge they may well want to tell their story, and that's fine. That actually helps in our assessment, which is, I will live in an organisation that expects assessment to be completed. But you can actually complete an assessment using solution-focused language. You know, I wanted to kill myself because my boyfriend of 7 years left me, for instance. Wow, that must have been pretty tough. It sounds like you actually have a really strong relationship and you loved him dearly to actually have such strong thoughts. Tell me a bit more about that. It's just a lovely solution-focused way of gathering a history. I can tick lots of my boxes for an assessment without actually saying, you know, how bad it must be and how horrible it must be. Of course it's horrible and of course it's bad, and we acknowledge that. However, you know, we also do a SF formulation about, obviously you love, you know, that was a very important relationship to you, and you know, you're important in the relationship. That's how much it meant to you. So there's so many opportunities to use SF in this problem-saturated world. The other thing is I've learned, and I think it was Brigitte on one of your podcasts actually spoke about how we need to be careful not to shove solution focus down other people's throats. So we need to acknowledge that there's other, you know, SF is not the be-all and end-all in therapies. There are other therapies, and SF works just as well as other therapies. So when I have a team member who is a very CBT-oriented, and like I say, look, I acknowledge CBT works well for some people. However, at the same time, because you're a part of this team, I expect that you will have an SF approach. So look, he'll come out and some days he'll say, see, not 1 ounce of SF. And I'll say, uh-uh, I came in and prescribed them some medication that they needed and I spoke SF all the way through. So we have a bit of a banter about that. However, it's just simply acknowledging that SF is an approach. Yes, there are other therapies, and other therapies do work well. And I think it's even Evan George and Chris Iverson talking recently, one of their courses was about, you need to give it a number of sessions, and then if it's not working for the person, then it's not working, and we need to acknowledge that. So I like to think I believe it'll work with anyone, but there are instances where it's not. And that person may need another type of therapy. So we also need to acknowledge that. But there's possibility to use SF in most things we do, yeah.
How does your team react when they come and bring the critical incidents that might have gone up or something like that?
Yeah, well, it may be that someone who we've been seeing who has attempted suicide while they've been seeing us. And so it may well be about, there will be the organisational boxes to tick about what went wrong. But at the same time, within that, there's also the opportunity to actually acknowledge that despite all that we tried, that things didn't go how we expected them to do. And actually asking the clinicians involved is, you know, what did go well? What did go well when you were seeing this person? Or despite this person ending up back in an emergency department or having to go to hospital, what went well and who did you find most helpful? What did you find most helpful? How did you do that? You know, on a scale of 0 to 10, 10 being how you would have liked it to have been handled best or that you would have handled it best, you know, where were you on that scale? You know, what prevented you from going from the 5 down to the 0? You know, what was it that you managed to achieve in that time of getting that person from where they were to hospital that got you there? You know, what would you think would be the next time something like this happened, or what would be the first sign that you were up to the, you know, beyond that? So there's just, yeah, even in critical incidents, we can talk solution focused. Yeah. In the world that I work in, I still need to tick all the boxes for the organisation. I can do that in a solution focused way. And it actually communicates that lovely respect and not optimism, but just acknowledgement that things can be done well, that despite whatever the critical incident, tragedy, horrible thing that happened, you know, labelling diagnosis someone might experience, there's still opportunity for someone to achieve their best hopes, for something different to happen, for something to be better, for a preferred outcome to occur. Yeah.
Well, listening to you, I really love how you highlight this aspect of acknowledging things and of acknowledging that there are things that don't work well, or acknowledging that there was a horrible incident or that something happened that we didn't want to. But then, on the other hand, not talking in depth about that, but like making this turn and look at, despite of that, what worked well and build from that, or look at different cases at other times, what could we learn from there, and then really turn the conversation from a very problem-focused conversation into a conversation that enables us to act, that it enables us to do things in a different way and shows how we can do it. And I think you described that very, very beautifully in saying we have to acknowledge the things, but we kind of don't have to talk in depth about it and to analyze it, but then rather analyze our preferred future, analyze our exceptions, and yeah, and learn from that for future things.
And you're also starting to do a research project.
I've let the secret out of the bag. I've had a conversation with Sarah Smock Jordan and Johnny Kim. I managed to chip away for long enough to convince clinical director of community mental health to come along to a meeting. So I organised a Zoom meeting for them at the start of this year, actually, before COVID came about, and invited my clinical director, my manager, my own academic professor of psychiatry, mainly because we have attached to my team is a suicide prevention team called HOPE. And there's great opportunity to do some research there, because embedded in their model of care with us is the use of solution focus. So they're keen to get some research done, my clinical director and the academic, the professor. So I thought, what a great opportunity. I think I'd seen a slide from last year's SFBTA from the research day. And I think, Elfie, you might have posted it on a Facebook page or on the SFBTA page. And it actually had Sarah's email address and what their, I think their best hopes were, was the last slide. And I thought, I have to email them, I have to organise a meeting. So we met online with Sarah Smock-Jordan and Johnny Kim, who heard that we want to know what can we do in that research space of SF and suicide prevention. And basically, there is some large amounts of money over here. And I suppose Johnny helped us think about, and we still need to make a decision about, what is it, if we were successful in obtaining these funds, what is it that we would want to do with it, which is really creating our research question. And probably we need to research training in training staff in the solution-focused approach in preparation for a larger research project around solution-focused use in people who experience thoughts of suicide, who have attempted suicide. So that's where we're at. We have to meet. Our research group has not been able to meet over COVID because we've been so overrun by just managing life as while COVID tries to settle or gets exterminated. So yeah, we'll get there. Now that I've spoken to you, I'll have to have a look at the deadlines for the research. research application for the research grant. It's about finding the money so that I can actually take some time to start that research. But I'm passionate about it. I've spoken to Heather Fierce. I've spoken to Brigitte Lavois. And so it appears there's a paucity in SF evidence in the suicide prevention space. It's certainly not well known in the Suicide Prevention Australia space. And I think worldwide it's not well known, but it's such a beautiful therapy to use with people who have had thoughts of suicide. Actually eliciting things like reasons for living without naming it as that, without saying, what are your reasons for living, dot, dot, dot. Having Heather Fisk's approach of, so, you know, once they've told you about their family or their dog, the important things in their life that you've elicited in your SF conversation, actually saying, so if I were to start a list, let's call it maybe reasons for living, you know, would being a father be one of those reasons for living? Could I start that? Could I put that at the top of the list or on the list, you know, and then the conversation eliciting more? That sort of stuff just sits so beautifully with someone who's had thoughts of dying or killing themselves, because there are reasons for living. It's about us as clinicians helping them find them without asking them to list them, because often cognitively it's too hard for them to actually name it and list it. It's up to us to elicit it in our conversation with them. That's actually our responsibility. If we're sitting in the suicide prevention space and we're using SF, that's what sits as our responsibility. And I expect that in the team that I team lead, that's expected to be in there. What we call, the organisation calls it the risk assessment. I'm trying to get it changed to a safety assessment or a reasons for living. Yeah, that's expected to be in their risk assessment, is the person's reasons for living, what their best hopes are, what difference it'll make, and then their reasons for living.
Before we come back to that, what are your best hopes from this research project?
Just to start, to have a baseline at least for evidence for solution focus in suicide prevention. Yep. That it's doable, its effectiveness would be ideal if we could actually talk about the effectiveness in the suicide prevention space. I think also in that space, I'll need to make sure, because it's really important from what I've learned from Suicide Prevention Australia, is that I need consumer and carer representatives to be included, to have their voice in the research. So that's my other part of the research I need to think about. Well, it is important that people have a voice in research, people who've lived through something like that. So what I hope to achieve is that we at least start the ball rolling with some evidence around the effectiveness or even just the use of solution-focused brief therapy in suicide prevention.
I'm deeply touched and truly grateful that you're doing this. And, you know, 2 years ago for my birthday, I did this program, Hopes and Reasons for Living, where I had conversations with Heather Fisk and Brigitte Lavois, who are very experienced in the field of suicide prevention. And well, with having lost your family member who has killed himself, it's something where I really see how solution-focused conversations can make a difference. And I think not only for clinicians, but in everyday life, because in solution-focused conversations, and I feel you really highlighted that beautifully, solution-focused is a hopeful approach. It's a respectful approach. And the more we invite people and ourselves, I think, to think about our preferred future, to think about the things that work, to see all these things, the more hope we spread and the more it's easy to live in a joyful way and to connect with each other and with that nourish our reasons for living. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
It is. It's a very hopeful approach. And I think not only is it hopeful and respectful, it's that helping find, other than the reasons for living, you know, what they would like to be happening instead. So it's the insteading as well that I love. And I can see it on a clinician's face that I might be working with a client. We might be seeing a person for the first time and I'll see the person's face, the clinician's face, like, what are we going to say now? Like, that's horrible. I can see it on their face. And then I'll say, so what would you like to be experiencing instead? And it just opens it up. Ta-da! Words we sometimes use in solution focus that just helps open up those possibilities and that hope that, I use the word magical. Sometimes it feels magical when you're in the room and using it. Sometimes it feels, well, that's a natural, you know, something that it just happens in the solution focused space. But here it's said by someone, sounds magical. I've heard other colleagues asked those questions and I've gone, yes, I'm so glad you asked that question. That's what they needed. And it's a simple word. It might be instead, or it might be, you know, halfway through and they've had their children have been annoying the crap out of them, or, you know, they're ungrateful and da 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 da. And then the clinician comes up with, so we were talking about reasons for living, despite all of the issues your children have caused for you. Obviously, being a mother is important, you know. Is being a mother important? Is that a reason for living? So there's magic that comes through. Yeah.
I just remember the conversation I had yesterday with a dear friend about, you know, seeing other people in their resources and seeing other people in their strength. And yesterday, very well reminded about how important that is. And I think the more you struggle, the more important it is to have people who kind of feel that they believe in you. And I think in Solution Focus, we do that because we see people in their resources first. And with that, just without asking a question, but with being there with this knowledge. And it's not trust. I think it's really knowledge that this person has resources, that this person went through a lot of things already and managed to do that. And with that, believing in their power to get out there towards a better life, however they define that for them. I think just that makes a huge, huge difference.
Yeah. What happens many times in public mental health in Australia is for someone even just to walk in the door of a mental health service, they want something to be different. To walk in the door, you don't come to be told how many more problems you have. You come for a reason. They may come so that they will eventually be taken off the Mental Health Act order so that they can go and live the life they want to live. But they've come for something to be different. So that's a great opportunity for us to use our solution-focused approach. It's just natural. It just happens organically because the person comes for something to be different, for something to be better. We go to a shop to get something. There's our preferred future is to get our groceries. So everybody has a reason for doing something. Good reason, those lovely words. Everyone has good reason. Someone who's been smoking more marijuana and we know that it causes their schizophrenia to become worse, their voices to become worse, then they will have had good reason to use that marijuana. And actually, when you actually ask someone, so despite you knowing that this causes your voices to get worse, you must have had good reason for using more marijuana. And often the whole story just unravels and away we go. We can solution focus that for the rest of the day. Because they, you know, they'll give you a good reason. They'll give you a reason why da 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 da, and you know, how would you like to be thing? You know, how would you like things to be different instead? And yeah, it's amazing.
So asking them what they would like instead is the most natural question.
Yep.
In the beginning, you also mentioned that it's simple and not simple.
Mm.
So what are the parts that are sometimes difficult, and how do you manage, or what do you do there?
The difficult parts are, in business or whether it's in counselling, or we're almost wired to talk about our problems. We live in a problem-saturated world. So the difficulty is that when you actually initially hear someone with a solution-focused approach, it sounds like they're just having an optimistic conversation, turning negative into positive. You need to be less pessimistic and more optimistic. So it sounds very simple, but in actual fact, once you start the process and it's very seductive that to draw you in and help you become immersed in the problem-saturated world. So for solution-focused, you need to hover and whilst listening and using the other person's language, which I find actually helps me stay in the solution-focused mindset, is actually hearing their words, using their words, repeating those back to them. And actually, we're always listening for their resources, exceptions. Some people will call them strengths. You always need to be mindful of, yes, I'm going to acknowledge the problem. I'm going to acknowledge that it's there, but I also need to actually be careful not to be seduced into the problem-saturated world that we live in. So seduced is probably the best way to describe it. And if you worked in a mental health service or in fields where it's, you know, people get labelled easily, as soon as you start feeling that heaviness in the work that you're doing, you know that you're getting sucked into that orbit. So you need to actually, okay, what else? I need to go and listen to an online something about solution focused, or go and read that article, or get out just that 100 ways of solution focused, or whatever it might be.
You can still register for the Hope and Reasons for Living program, for instance, for free. You will find the link in the resource section.
This reminds me of the stories we heard from a lot of leaders who are working with solution focus, and they're maybe all by themselves in an organization and doing solution focus, and the rest is doing just the normal things they do. And almost all of the solution focus practitioners who are in areas of work where problem language is a very common language, they describe that they meet up in networks, that they have, say, their gas stations where they fuel up again and where they get their inspiration that helps to keep on doing it. And also one of the things that you're doing with the regular dose of solution focus of 45 minutes, for example, with your team members, and just really actively going out and doing something that helps to keep on doing it. So that's really an interesting and also important story.
Yeah, actually, now that you're talking about it, it's actually about maintaining your SF fitness, because it actually makes life easier to keep going and keep having SF contact. So it can be as simple as having an online conversation, jumping onto a Zoom session, a Vika. There's so much. And as I was saying to Elfie earlier, since COVID, it's actually almost overwhelming the amount of SF that's available, because everyone's online offering stuff, or there's networks, and there's just some days I actually find I need to not look at my emails because I'm worried that I've missed out on something. So it's been, in many ways, COVID's been fantastic around actually giving us the opportunity to network more in the SF space. And gee, there's so many great conversations happening online. There's no excuse not to be SFing more. Yeah.
That's the thing we love to call friend power. And we have this saying on our motorhome, friend power is stronger than willpower. And we strongly believe in friend power. And willpower is a nice thing, but I think with friend power, you're even stronger.
Yeah. Well, it's that connection. Connection is so important. With friends and the connection, there's that hope as well. So, it's lovely.
So, Michelle, looking back on your solution-focused journey over the past 9 years, if there's one thing we have not yet talked about that was really important for you in your learning journey, what would that be?
Look, I would say the most important thing for me was actually I had some connections within Australia and becoming part of their board of AASFBT. But also going to the international conferences actually sort of broadened my exposure to that SF done similarly throughout the world. There's a little bit of tweaking here and there. Some people approach SF in different ways, and that how you can actually blend it. And you can actually blend, the way Steve DeShazer actually first asks best questions and how we might actually talk about what difference that makes compared to asking a best hopes question or preferred future out or preferred outcomes question. So there's been so much, and with microanalysis. So I remember Harry Corman coming to be the keynote a couple of years ago in Melbourne to the AASFBT, and even he just started talking about microanalysis. I hadn't heard about it before. So it's about being exposing yourself or creating those opportunities for yourself to actually hear what's happening internationally. Yes, you can read it in papers, but it's also great if you can get to places and meet people. It's really invigorating, and that's helped me with my practice become even more passionate, because to hear what people are doing elsewhere in our big island that's got only a few people, only, 24 million compared to elsewhere, there's huge SF communities elsewhere that we can connect with. And I suppose COVID has actually given us those opportunities to connect even better and creating those networks that benefit me and my practice. But yeah, I feel so privileged to have those relationships now, because I get to meet wonderful people like you and Heather and Pam, and so Pam King, and lovely.
We're really looking forward to having you back here in Switzerland, Michelle.
Oh, we'll be back with motorbikes.
And now we have even a guest room.
Oh, even better.
And for all the people who want to see what's going on in the Solution Focus world, come to the resource section of this podcast. Go to www.sfmtour.com/simplefocuspodcast and then go to episode number 104. And there you found links to many things that are online and offline.
So, Michelle, let's come to the challenge of the week. We would love to invite you to invite our listeners to a little challenge for their solution-focused journey.
Wow. So for their solution-focused journey is to actually come up with the first 10 things that come to mind that they do well in their solution-focused work.
Thank you very much for that challenge. We're already starting to make a list here.
Well, the first one is having conversations with people from all over the world like you, Michelle. So thank you very much for agreeing to have this conversation with us, for sharing your beautiful work and, well, for doing the work you do.
And we invite everybody out there to share your list of 10 or even more things in the comment section of this podcast. So go to www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast and then go to episode number 104. And please also let us know what inspired you about this podcast, what inspired you about what Michelle said, and what difference does this make for you and your solution-focused practice?
Yeah, once again, a big thank you, Michelle, for staying up this late with us. And a big thank you for everyone listening. A big thank you to everyone who gave us a review for our podcast. We highly appreciate that because your review really helps other people to find the Simply Focused podcast even easier. And yeah, to connect with all the great solution-focused people we have been interviewing so far and we will interview in the future. So thank you.
Thank you very much and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Wow, what a great episode again. Do you like the Simply Focused podcast? Well, help Elfie and Dominic spread the word. Give the Simply Focused podcast an excellent rating on iTunes and Google Play and other platforms. And share your thoughts and inspirations with others by commenting at www.sfontour.com/simplyfocusedpodcast.